Hello, fellow Vault Hunters. I'm J. Michael Tatum, and you're listening to The Geek Show.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comics, manga, graphic novel, and all sorts of other things podcast. My name's Rob. Joining me today on this day of days is Andrew.
Yeah, well, the day of days was yesterday of days.
Yeah, but, well, just to clarify to everyone, yesterday was Free Comic Book Day, and we got all of the comics.
Which technically is a dirty lie, because this isn't going out today.
Yeah, but we got all of the free comics, but Andrew unfortunately arrived late, so he didn't get any of the extras, like the lovely little HeroClix Juggernaut figure that I got, and the lovely badge, the pin badge of Rocket and Groot that I got.
I mean, you could have got me some, Rob.
I didn't know. I thought you were going to turn up on your own.
I did turn up on my own. It's just I like sleeping.
That's not my fault.
Just waits outside the shop before it's even open.
Yes, I did. Like a good boy.
Who does that? Who does that?
A true comic book fan.
I'll take my 8 hours.
But yeah, so today we are having our annual Free Comic Book Day special, where we will be talking about as many of the comics that we got through from yesterday as we can.
Basically, so that we can shove it as much into an hour. Ooh, I just had some horrible flashbacks to the beginning of Die Vergeld. Basically, for our listeners, the radio-friendly version of that story is, it's a manga that begins with lots of electrical equipment being placed into many different holes.
Yes. Yes, it does. What can I say?
What you can say is, Andrew, why don't you start us off? Because we're burning daylight, Rob, and we've got a lot to get through.
Well, I'm waiting for you to begin. So why don't you begin?
You didn't cue me. I can't just do these things when you don't cue me up.
Okay.
Should we even introduce ourselves? I don't think we introduced ourselves.
I did. It's too late for that now. I did introduce you right at the beginning because I do good introduction.
Yes, you am the word's best.
Yes, yes, I do. Anyway, why don't you start us off, Andrew, with the biggest story in comics at the moment, which I believe is Captain America being a Nazi.
Put down my issue of Guardians of the Galaxy then. Secret Empire! The Free Comic Book Secret Empire, blah blah, Captain America's a Nazi, everything's horrible. So this takes place, I think, like, in between the issue 0 and issue 1?
I think so.
So basically this is while Hydra, like, taking over America. And basically all the superheroes are fighting. There's a bunch of, like, pretentious dialogue about blah blah, so many threats, so many dangers, but the one that would end us was the one we trusted the most. Because this is such a serious story, Rob. Such a good, serious story.
Yeah.
God, I hate this book.
Well, it was confusing me because I like the idea of doing all of the art in red, white and blue. Or shades of red, white and blue, yeah? But the whole thing with Thor's hammer confused the bejesus out of me.
Yeah, so it's basically Captain America shows up and all the heroes are like, oh no. Well, actually, they don't even seem that fussed that, like, Captain America's part of Hydra now.
Yeah, but there's a reason why the whole bit with Thor's hammer confuses the crap out of me.
Slow your horses, Rob.
Okay.
So basically Captain America, he has a bunch of contingency plans or something, like, he shuts the vision down with some kind of code, makes Thor drop her hammer for reasons.
Yeah.
Scarlet Witch has a wobbly.
Doesn't she always?
Indeed. Then we have, quite frankly, just, see, it's weird because the art in this is, like, really nice and detailed, but then there's just, like, this sequence of tiny panels that I really don't like.
Yeah. They really annoyed me.
But not as much as how this issue ends with Captain America lifting Thor's hammer.
Yeah, and that's the bit that I have issues with. Very, very, very big issues with. All right. Have you been reading Thor?
Yes, I have.
Okay. So you know what's inside Mjolnir?
Yeah, it's like, it's basically a sentient-ish hammer.
It's the Mother Storm is inside. It's a sentient storm that can even challenge the gods. which is one of the reasons why Jane Foster has more control over Thor, over Mjolnir, than Thor did, than the original Thor did. So I don't think Captain America is going to be able to lift it.
No, but see, he's worthy because...
reasons?
Yes.
But the thing is, that's an enchantment.
I don't think Spencer gets how Mjolnir works.
But this is the thing.
Or how, like, competent dialogue works.
But this is what I'm saying. The whole idea of him being worthy, that's a nonsense. And the Thor comic actually said that. Odin put those words on, but that's not actually an enchantment. It's basically who the Mother Storm deems worthy. She didn't deem Odin worthy, which is why she wouldn't budge.
Well, I mean, to be fair, it's more like a half-truth, isn't it? It's basically Odin saying, you have to be worthy to lift this hammer.
Yeah.
But I never said, I'm the one who decides who's worthy.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I imagine like he wiggles his eyebrows.
Gives a sly wink to the camera. Which is funny because it's Odin. Maybe that's why he's wearing the eye patch all the time. He's winking all the time because he's not telling the truth.
So you've cracked it. Secret Empire is dumb, Rob, and it doesn't end until like September.
I know, which is sad.
I know.
And the thing is, it's early days and we're already picking faults with it.
To be fair, like, we, along with the rest of the internet, were picking faults with it long before it started.
True, we were picking faults with it when it was still Civil War. We were picking faults with it when it was, Avengers, whatever, standoff.
Oh, Avengers.
Yeah.
I think that is, like, the big problem, is that it's another event after another event after another event.
Yeah, they just can't seem to get their act together, can they?
No, but it's okay, Rob, because this one's going to change everything.
How?
Marvel Legacy, when it's all going to get retconned.
Oh, good.
Anyway, then the second part is a little primer for the new Spider-Man series by Chip Zdarsky.
Which looks interesting, I must say. I like the idea of the new and improved Trapster.
Yeah, who's just like some trendy teen.
Yeah.
Also, she calls Spider-Man old, which is kind of hilarious.
Hang on. So we have a hipster Trapster. I think we can go...
Which I feel like it's almost definitely a euphemism for something.
Exactly. Oh, so yeah. Secret Empire. It's dumb. It's stupid. It's dumb.
And stupid.
So anyway, on to the one that you did want to do first.
Yep. Because after that, we've got Guardians of the Galaxy, which is kind of a prologue for the new series.
Yeah.
So, basically, it starts with the Guardians stuck in prison by the Nova Corps, just like in the movie.
Yeah, but why are they in prison again?
Because it's kind of implied that they've done some naughty things at some point, because that's what they do.
Okay.
With their crazy roguish ways.
Okay.
So, they're there. They try and break out. Rocket manages to sort of finagle his way into the control room, but then gets electrocuted, only for Tiny Groot to take over. Which, hey, look at that, Bob. Conveniently, Groot is small, just like in the movie.
Yeah.
So then they escape from prison, just like in the movie. And they're going to go to their ship. But then instead, Rocket decides to steal a new ship, which, look, Rob, it looks just like the ship from the movie.
Yes.
Isn't that convenient?
What a surprise.
Like, a joke, but to be fair, it was quite fun. Like basically, because one thing that is different from the movie is apparently Drax has taken a vow never to kill anyone ever again.
Yeah, I was confused by pacifist Drax.
I just love that, like, you've got them pinned down by the Nova Corps, and Starla's just screaming, "No, Drax, don't let me talk some sense into the Novas before you kill them all." And Drax is like, "You dishonor yourself."
Do you know the thing that confused me about Drax right now? You remember the A-Team movie? The god-awful A-Team movie?
This is going to go somewhere I don't like, isn't it?
You remember what they did to B.A. Baracus in the A-Team movie?
He was... Not really, Rob. I don't have an encyclopedic knowledge of the A-Team movie.
Okay, Mr. T is playing him in the A-Team movie. I can't remember who played him, but they basically tried to pull a fast one and turn him into a pacifist. And now they're doing the same thing to Drax. And I'm just trying to say, it didn't work in the A-Team movie. Don't do it to Drax. You did it to Mr. T.
I disagree. I think it worked. Let's face it, Drax is a bit of a one-note character.
He is.
Like, I think this is a bit of a fun development.
until he stops being a pacifist and realizes that he's Drax.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's unfair to like criticize this based on they did a similar thing in a completely different property that I didn't like.
True.
That is a weak argument, Rob.
Yeah, but I mean, the A-Team, Guardians of the Galaxy is basically A-Team in space.
Yeah, but again, this is not made by the same people.
True.
It's an internet comment section argument, Rob, and you're better than that.
No, I'm not. I think you overestimate my abilities.
Shush, Rob. Shush. You're better than that because I say you're better than that, and we're going to ignore anyone who says otherwise.
I think you misunderestimate my abilities.
Another internet comment strategy, but I didn't say I wasn't a hypocrite. So there.
Yeah, I think you misunderestimate my abilities.
Anyway, I like the Guardians of the Galaxy issue. It was fun.
Cool.
I look forward to reading the new series.
Excellent. For my first trick, I went...
No, not your first trick.
Oh, no. There's something else.
Not done yet. Yes. Slapping the comic out your hand.
Yes, he did.
After Guardians of the Galaxy, there's also a little preview thing for the new Defenders series.
Yes, there is.
Which, basically, you've got a Daredevil, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist kind of bursting into a club with some guy who wants to take over from the Kingpin, and basically saying, no, you're not having any of that. And, like, this whole thing is a story being told to Jessica Jones by Diamondback, who is apparently not dead now.
Yeah.
And then he shoots her with a special laser gun and walks away.
Yep. Saying he's going to take back everything.
Yep, which is... I mean, there's not really that much there to comment on. Art's nice. But it hasn't sold me on the series, and I don't think anything is.
Except maybe the...
With like, Brian Michael Bendis, who's going to be writing it, is it's got to the point now where even if you write something that's good, I'm just going to be sitting there thinking, okay, but when is this going to start getting bad?
Yeah. I mean, is he involved in the TV series?
No, Rob, because that's not how things work. But yes, we'll take that awkward segue to go into... Defenders trailer was pretty neat.
Yes. Well, the reason why I asked is because he has done stuff in TV before.
Yeah, I guess it kind of makes sense. But no, he's like... Because Marvel TV is a completely different department.
Yeah, I know, but with him having worked on TV screenplays...
God, I hope not.
Yeah, that's why I was concerned. That's why I was asking. You know, because I don't know who's doing the screenplays for the Defenders TV series. And I was worried that it was going to be Brian Michael Bendis, because I have to go
preemptively break his hands with hammers just in case.
But yeah, Defenders trailer came out, and it looked interesting.
I would even go far to use the term nifty keen.
Yes.
Because if the school kids can bring back Sick and Fit, I'm bringing back Nifty Keen.
I thought it was Peachy Keen.
Shut up, Rob. You don't know. You weren't there.
No, I think you'll find I was. I just wasn't in school at that point.
Zephy, you weren't there, man. You didn't grow up in the harsh playground.
Was it like Vietnam?
Worse. Lost a lot of good friends.
So, anyway, yeah. Defenders trailer came out. I like the fact that that everybody is keeping their characters from their own TV shows. And it's not trying to... You know, it's not trying to make them all friends right at the beginning.
Yeah. I also like the fact that in, like, about, 2.5 minutes... It makes Iron Fist a much more likable character than an entire series of his own show.
Yeah, I know. How do they manage that?
Except I think he works better as part of the Defenders when he's like the goofy kid member.
Yeah, and that's the thing I think is wrong with Iron Fist as a TV series. Iron Fist, I mean, even in the comics, Iron Fist is no good by himself, but you put him with Luke Cage and you've got magic.
Yeah, that's the secret, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just add Luke Cage.
Yeah. Is that like a doctor's thing? Take two Luke Cage and call me in the morning.
Just apply directly to the skin.
Apply Luke Cage directly to the skin. That's just wrong.
Also, what I liked about the Defenders trailer.
What?
The fact that Claire Temple finally just said, like, oh, I should call someone.
Yes.
Like, after constantly being, no superhero, don't go do this by yourself. If only there was someone else who could help you.
Yes.
Like that. Dragonist from any of the other shows that you know, Claire.
Yes.
It's hurt me. Like, even in the good ones, like the Daredevils and the Luke Cages and the Jessica Joneses, having to hear that constantly hurt me in my soul.
Yes. I think it was one of the most frustrating things. Like, everyone's in the same area. You all know each other. Why aren't you working together?
must be willful ignorance at this point.
Well, only one of them has the excuse that they're blind.
That is a good... But speaking of Daredevil, I think my favourite line from that trailer is like, I assume they've got in some situation where Daredevil and Jessica Jones are attacked by the Hand.
Yeah.
And like, Daredevil has just quickly like tied Jessica's scarf over his face to hide his identity.
Yep.
And then he's walking down the corner and she just goes, "You look stupid." He says, "Your scarf."
Yeah, I like that.
I love that snarky banter that they all have.
Yes. I'm looking forward to the Defenders.
Yeah, should be good.
Right, my turn then, is it, finally?
Fine, if you want to have a go.
Okay, I'm going to kick off with...
So I've been reading I Hate Image.
Yeah. I've been reading Boom Studios 2017 Summer Blast, which has three things in there. Mouse Guard, Brave Chef Brianna, and Cordy and the Creepers, which is from... which is an interesting but weird one about bands. Mouse Guard is as glorious as ever, but it was an interesting one because it was kind of a fable from the world of Mouse Guard, told by an old warrior to a couple of kids who were wanting to go explore in the forbidden lands where there's giant monsters like wolves and foxes. Brave Chef Brianna, I've talked about on the show already, so and. It's basically the section where she first arrives in Monster Town. And according to
the Creepers, I was going to say that just read like it was just a bit taken from the first issue.
Yeah, it was. Cordy and the Creepies is... I'm not too sure what to make of it. It's a bit like Lumberjanes, but it seems very, very childish. I'm not a big fan of it, I've got to be honest.
Because it says Lumberjanes. Oh. Sure, I've literally just noticed.
What?
Literally, like, the first panel, you've got the Lumberjanes in the audience for the Cody and the Creepies concert.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess they're, like, a band that exists in that universe.
Yeah, but it starts off with the manager for Cody and the Creepies actually being killed in a car accident, which was, it caught me a little bit off guard. But, yeah, Boom Studios, it's at the back of the Boom Studios thing where they start going through the stuff that they're doing, all the lines that they do. Like Lumberjanes, Giant Days, the Realist, Tale of Sand, stuff like that. And then they've got like this more of their superhero stuff with the Irredeemable, and then the Explosive New Worlds, like Steven Universe over the Garden Wall. And you get to realize that Boom Studios are doing a hell of a lot of left field stuff.
Yeah, they've got a lot of stuff.
And what the other thing I like about this as well. At the end of Brave Chef Brianna, there's a recipe for Brazilian cheese waffle breakfast sandwiches.
Yeah, okay. I like that they, apparently every issue has a recipe with it.
Yep.
Which and, I thought that was cool.
Yeah, and I like that. And I am actually going to try that recipe because food is something I enjoy. So anyway, back to you.
Yep. So, like I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted during my rude interruption, I've been reading I Hate Image.
Yes.
Which is, like, ridiculously fun. Because it's basically Gert from I Hate Fairyland just travelling through all the other Image properties and killing everyone in them. So basically, she starts off beating up the protagonist from, I think it's Bitch Planet.
Okay.
Basically beating him up to try and get some information. And then she gets told she needs to go to a planet somewhere, so she hitches a ride with the Will from Saga. And basically, just got him asking, so why are you going to the land of Image? She's like, vacation. If you're just lying, I'm going, lying. Work trip, lying. Grandma died.
Lying.
And then just gets her kind of shrugging, going, oh, well. And then just you see the ship crashed with a gigantic bloody axe. So then she ends up in the land of the Walking Dead, where she meets Rick Grimes. And I just looked at there's a bit with Rick screaming, Carl, if she moves, Carl, shoot her in the brain, Carl. Then Carl's, he likes saying my name. So Gert basically buys favor with them by giving Rick just like a giant Mickey Mouse hand to shove over his stump. But then they drive off in the Winnebago, only get surrounded by zombies. Then you've got Rick giving kind of this big, long talk about, we need to stick together. If we plan on getting out of this alive, I can't express how important teamwork is going to be. He just goes, just pushes him into the massive pile of zombies and runs off.
Teamwork.
Yep. then you get her. She kind of takes a stroll through east of west. Which I like the idea of just her looking at a map going, but these directions don't make any sense. Because obviously it's just the name of the series.
Yeah.
Then she takes a detour through Black Science, which just she kind of messes with the protagonist of that because he's a real emo dude.
Well, he is, kind of.
And they pass through the Ellis tree of, you know, Warren Ellis fame.
Yep.
Which they don't get because they're not smart enough. They travel through the land of Southern Bastards and have some ribs. Then, they take a detour through Chew. And basically she gives Tony Chew a delicious piece of cake. Only for them to get horrifying visions of Gert just like murdering unicorns and bunnies to make it.
Ouch.
Then the glorious bit happens. She goes to Club Wicked and Divine and murders like Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey, who are the writer and artist for that. Then just yells out into the microphone, the 90s sucked.
Nice.
And then you get all like the 90s image characters. But like you've got what's his name? The guy with like the skull on his face. You've got Shaft, you've got Savage Dragon, you've got Witchblade. And she ends up just like murdering her way through all of those.
Awesome.
But see, it all has a point because she needs to arm herself with all the guns and all the belts and the giant shoulder pads to make an impression with the one guy who can get her where she needs to go. It's Spawn.
Really?
And you just seem like sitting on a pile of like human skulls yelling. Yeah, so like in the dialogue box, it's just, yeah, this guy is an actual Hellspawn, so most likely he's going to kill you on the spot. But there's always a chance he could. Then just cut to Spawn yelling, love you, seriously, you're too effing cute. And like the idea is he wants it as a sidekick so they can strike the Batman and Robin pose because he's always wanted to do that.
Nice.
So eventually Spawn gets her to the top of Image Towers. And she opens the door to find the Image Partners.
Oh.
So it's like all the original Image creators, like Rob Liefeld and the other ones.
Wasn't Todd McFarlane one of them?
Yeah, that's right, Todd McFarlane. Yeah, because Todd McFarlane is like holding a Spawn action figure and go, hey, bud, what you doing in our offices and stuff, bud?
Yeah.
But I see that it's like she's gone directly to the founders of Image to say, you know, I've been stuck in Fairyland and I want out. But then she accidentally kills them all.
This is very...
What she says, once I get in the groove, I just can't stop.
This is very Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe, isn't it?
It is. It's basically the Image version of Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe.
I'm liking this.
Yeah, I like it. Like, especially because I went on Twitter afterwards. And like, you've just got all the various Image authors going like, so thanks for killing my character, Scotty Young.
Oh.
So yeah, that one was a lot of fun.
Cool. Back to me, is it?
Yeah, I also realised that wasn't the one I was supposed to talk about now, but eh.
Yeah, who cares? Back to me, and I'm going to stick with Boom Studios because I found something interesting, and it's called Fresh Off the Boat presents Legion of Dorpitude featuring Lazy Boy. Now, before the show, Andrew made a comment about him being a lazy boy today, which is the main reason I want to talk about this one.
I am a lazy boy.
So this comic technically is featuring you, Andrew.
Yes, finally my superhero debut.
Now, just an introduction. Fresh Off the Boat is actually... originally, it was a memoir written by chef and food personality Eddie Huang about his experiences growing up in America. And it's now a TV series. I think it's just been announced that it's going to have a third series. And it's a TV series on ABC. And this is basically the characters from Fresh Off the Boat in comic book form, but with superpowers. And you start off with the kid, Eddie Huang, who has written a comic book with his brother called The Legion of Dorpitude. And it's got a variety of different characters. And then suddenly this comic book disappears and it turns out that his family, his dad and his mum, have these powers. And his siblings have these powers. And even the grandma on the electric wheelchair, even she has powers, but they're still not sure what her powers are. And so they're going around, you know, they're going around the city and they're basically doing good and inspiring the populace by cutting out by stopping people being nasty to each other, not by fighting crime, but just by making people nicer to each other and, you know, telling people off when they're being overly aggressive or passive aggressive or something like that.
I like that.
Yeah. And so it goes on, because the dad is so obsessed with America that he is literally a flying cowboy with a lasso. And the mum has powers of persuasion, and her powers of persuasion are at their peak when there's a show that's on TV, things like that. So they're going around, they're inspiring the city, everything like that. But then, you know, they keep facing these weirder and weirder foes. One of them is Eddie's principal from school, who is the detention, yeah, the detentionator is what they call it.
Detentionator.
Yes. But then at the end, they have to fight the Mecha Queen octogenarian creature from the Everlasting Abyss, who's basically a giant Mecha Godzilla type thing. And they're basically trying to fight this. And eventually, Mum beats this thing. And out of its mouth comes their arch nemesis, Dr. Octogenarian, who's basically Grandma. And she's the one who's caused all this to happen. And the reason why she's done it is because she thought they'd be able to take her to the casino quicker.
So the grandma has magic powers.
Yes, because she's old and Chinese. And obviously, everybody who's old... So are you saying?
I was just yelling, of course, because she's old and Chinese.
Yeah, and obviously everybody who's old and Chinese has to have magic powers.
And no kung fu.
Yes, but because she's in her 80s, she's given up the kung fu, but the magic is still there. And so she just wanted people to take her to the casino, but everyone ignored her. So she gave them all superpowers in the hopes they could do things quicker and maybe have time to take her to the casino.
I like that.
And so, yeah, that's Fresh Off the Boat, presenting the Legion of Dorpitude, featuring Lazy Boy. And it's great because Lazy Boy's costume is basically, he's sitting there on, remember the New Gods in Marvel? Orion
no,
and the rest
no,
of them.
Because they were a DC property.
Oh, sorry, in DC, sorry.
You scrub, Rob.
Sorry, I got confused.
Scrub.
I got confused because you have the Titans, and then you've got the New Gods, and they're both kind of the same thing.
It's too, we have already lost like 70% of our listeners.
I don't care.
We're probably just spontaneously combusted in rage.
That's fine. It means the internet's freer. We're freeing
the
internet.
Is that what this show is about all along?
Yes.
I feel so used.
Anyway, you remember the New Gods in DC? I apologize to the DC fans for my gaffe there. But the New Gods in DC, so you have Orion, and you have his brother, who sits in that chair all the time.
Oh, yeah. It's Metron.
Metron, that's it. Lazy Boy is basically sitting in a chair like Metron, with a green visor and a purple suit with a massive B on the front. So we have your next cosplay, Andrew.
Yes.
Floating chair, green visor, purple suit.
I mean, the floating chair might be a bit of work, but we can pull it off.
It depends on how many slaves we can get.
I mean, I do like the image of me just being, like, hoisted on the shoulders of four overly muscular dudes.
Yes. That's not a floating chair. That's a palanquin.
Good enough.
It's close enough, yeah. Anyway, over to you.
Okay, so I've been reading a comic that you gave me, Rob.
Yes.
Also, I hate you so much.
Was it Barbie?
I hate you. I hate you more than anyone has hated anyone else in the history of the world.
Did you read Barbie?
I did read Barbie. But this time, I read Barbie right. So, see, last year I read Strawberry Shortcake.
Yes.
And that nearly did.
Yes.
So, I took proper precautions this time. By which I mean I consumed like half a bottle of wine beforehand. And it was amazing. Because, see, Barbie's a fashion designer.
Okay.
And she's got to get ready for the big day. Because Whitney Chang, Rob, the Whitney Chang, wants her to be part of her fashion show.
Okay.
And her random friend, whose name I don't know, who has a fashion blog, they need to make it. But they need to show they've got vision, Rob. They need vision.
See, I'm just imagining Vision turning up and trying to offer and saying, I do not understand fashion.
him and me both. So Barbie starts doodling, and then she makes things. Like, she throws in interesting colours, unexpected layers, whimsical sparkles.
It has whimsical sparkles.
And exciting fabrics. But oh no, because the thing that she makes ends up just looking exactly like Whitney's dress from last year. Nightmare. So she needs to find her vision, her creativity, Rob, because you can't just take another person's creativity, goddammit. So things are looking grim. But don't worry, Rob. I know you're starting to panic, but turns out Barbie's doodles were actually like an intricate flower pattern, and the random sheet of material she was writing on was actually able to turn into a dress.
Is there a fairy godmother hiding somewhere?
No, like, there's a bad, just like, she whips off a bed sheet, basically, takes basically what looked like a pair of safety scissors, cuts a tiny little thing into it, and suddenly it's a dress. Oh, also, apparently Barbie invented magic paint that can paint on any surface.
Really?
Yep.
I don't know how to respond to this.
Well, if you don't know how to respond to that, because that was just Barbie fashion superstar, you're going to love Barbie's Starlight Adventure.
Oh my god. There's more than one story?
Yep, because then the second story is about Space Princess Barbie, who lives on some kind of space compound with her friends, the hoverboard racing legend Sally, but that's like SAL-LEE, so it's not like a normal person name, it's a future name.
Yes, in the future, all names will be hyphenated.
Yeah, well, except for Sheena and Karina, who are gravity geniuses. I don't know what that means. And that... Leo, who's a prince and a pilot, all at the same time.
Gravity genius, right? If you take it in the modern sense, that would mean they're fat.
No, but this is in the future sense, Rob. Because it's in the future, Rob.
So
the future.
So they're big boned, then?
Although it's ironic you say that. Because they go for a picnic, but find that someone's chopping down all the space trees and, like, their biodome forest thing that they apparently live in. So they then start trying to stop the people in the space excavators, and one of them, because I've already forgotten whose everyone's name is, just, like, grabs a sandwich and yells to one of the people, "Are you hungry?" And then, like, runs off yelling, "Come and get it." They just go, "Oh, I'm trying." Because construction workers love them sandwiches.
Hey, what can I say?
And then they do a bunch more stuff, but it turns out the person in charge of it is Ella Stella of Stella Industries. And that's Barbie.
Oh, I'm going to bounce straight off that because...
No, you're not, because also I read Wonder Woman, but that's just a reprint of, like, one of the issues you talked about.
Yes, but I could bounce off that still. Because following on from, I didn't realize you'd read Barbie, because right after that, I was going to go straight into DC Superhero Girls.
Okay, yeah, so basically it's like a horrendous amalgamation of Barbie and Wonder Woman.
Yes. And
also, Space Prince Leo does literally nothing.
Yeah, I know.
You don't know, Rob. You don't know what I've been through.
You don't know what I've been through with DC Superhero Girls. I read DC Superhero Girls. We're on the same level here.
No. DC Superhero Girls at least has the veneer of superheroes.
Like, whatever.
Barbie invented magic paint that can paint on literally any surface, and yet she's a fashion intern and not, like, a billionaire.
This starts off with what's her name? Is it Bumblebee, is it? Or whatever her name is. Yeah, Bumblebee.
I mean, generally it helps when you give me some kind of description.
Yeah, this starts off with Diana and Bumblebee fighting the Double Dare twins.
Bumblebee is the one who looks like a bumblebee.
No, I'm not on about the Transformer. I'm on about Bumblebee as in...
No, I mean, yeah, the superhero Bumblebee who dresses up in, like, a yellow and black stripy top.
Yeah.
Like a bumblebee.
Basically, she's DC's version of Wasp.
But bee-themed.
But bee-themed, yeah. And so they're fighting the Double Dare twins who've been stealing stuff from people, like handbags and stuff. And so they put them into the paddy wagon to go to the jail. You've got Batgirl there, and in the back you've got Killer Moth, you've got Solomon Grundy, and you've got a lass who I don't recognise, who's got a red hairband and black hair. I don't care who she is. But anyway, all of a sudden, you know, everyone's happy, all the super friends, because they are super friends, they're all happy together. And then all of a sudden there's a gust of wind and Hermes turns up from Mount Olympus and tells Diana that he has a message, but he can't deliver the message until noon. And so he has to wait till noon, which is 5 minutes away. And then they do one of their little routines from when she was growing up. And then he gives the message to her, which is basically from Daddy Zeus, saying, my dearest daughter, it would be my honor to have you join me and your family on Mount Olympus for the summer. Love, Dad. So Diana has to decide, is she going to go to Mount Olympus for summer vacation? And so she's troubled by this, and she's talking to
her. It's some sure high-stakes storytelling.
Yeah, and she does a FaceTime call using a magical Wonder Woman device, which is not like...
It's just an iPad.
No, it's...
An iPad with a giant W written on it.
Yeah, it's basically a gold iPad with a giant W on the top, right?
And oh my God, she's like, my uncle works at Nintendo, kid.
Yes.
She's like, yeah, but my mum invented this. It's called a WonderPad. It's like an iPad, but like seven times better.
Yep, basically. And so she's talking to her mum. And Hermes comes by and tells her that she can take her friends with her. So she goes to ask her friends, but all her friends have plans for the summer. Oh, no. But reliable and trusty Bumblebee turns up. But Beast Boy makes an appearance in this because Batgirl is going, you know, is going on a summer tour in Europe with Beast Boy and Katana.
Okay.
And
I'm disappointed that there isn't a scene. Well, she goes to, so Batman, what are you doing spending the summer holidays with your pair?
Yeah, but this is the more confusing thing. Big Barda and Lady Shiva are going to spend the summer on the Kent farm with Supergirl.
Big Barda and world-renowned assassin Lady Shiva.
Yeah, but Poison Ivy can't leave her garden. Harley Quinn is going to the Metropolis Theatre Camp. Flash has to practice.
Practice what?
Yeah, I don't know. Killer Frost is working at Capes and Cowls for the summer.
Whoa. Actually, let's just... Flash has to practice by, like, running, I assume.
Yeah, track practice.
Yep, don't see how going to hang out with the literal god of speed could go help that.
No. Killer Frost has to work at Capes and Cowls over the summer. Miss Martian doesn't want to go because it sounds too crowded. Starfire is heading out to Tamaran for the summer. Cyborg has to do systems upgrades. Cheetah doesn't want to go because her and Diana don't get on anyway. And so Bumblebee is the only person left who goes with her. And so they go to Mount Olympus, and Diana's looking forward to seeing her little sister. Apparently she has a little sister. And when they get there, all they hear is some, you know, it's a bit windy. And then they hear somebody going, I hate ambrosia. Now, I want to call foul there, because ambrosia make really, really nice rice pudding. And their custard is pretty good as well. So
it's some top-notch custardage.
Exactly. So I call foul like on that. Sorry?
They'll do like chocolate and strawberry custard.
Yes, they do as well. So I call foul on that because ambrosia, I swear by their rice pudding.
That's just going to be nonsense to anyone outside the UK, isn't it?
Yes, it is, but I don't care. So DC Superhero Girls.
That's good. We're really reaching out to the international audience.
DC Superhero Girls is mind-numbing pap, and if you're reading it, you must be 7 years old and female.
I mean, to be fair, that is the target. If you're reading this, you're probably the target audience.
Yes. If you're reading this and you are male and over the age of 15, then you really have no business reading this.
Yeah, which, I mean, to be fair, I think we're aware the same thing is true of Barbie.
Yes.
Like, it's very obviously not for us.
Yeah, it is so obviously not for us. But that's why I'll be fair. It's mind-numbing pap for me, but then again, I'm in my 40s. But for for the target audience, it's probably really good. You know, it's just not. I'm not the target audience, so.
Yep. To be fair, it is also pretty cool that like they are making superhero comics deliberately for little girls to get there. God, no. Just the term little girl sounds like really creepy. I don't know.
Yes, why. There's no way you can sound it. Make it sound not creepy.
See, I want to see young females, but now that sounds like too medically creepy.
See, my main problem with DC superhero girls is basically it's bombshells for kids, right? And I have an inherent problem with bombshells anyway because it's gone too far the other way. It's not about equality. It's more about, look, women are so much better than men. Not women are equal to men. And DC superhero girls, fine, not a problem with it. But where are all the guys? It's not just women in the world.
Like, it is for girls, and girls tend to like want... I don't think you can really complain about equality in like a child's comic.
All I'm saying is that...
Actually, yeah, Barbie, where are all your male characters?
Yeah.
How come Space Prince Leo doesn't get to do anything?
I mean, they can do an advert with a kid saying, it's so fierce, but they can't include any male characters, you know, or the male character in the comic can't do anything.
No, I'm making... See, I worry that you're seriously complaining about the fact that there's, like, an underrepresentation of male characters in comics for, like, seven-year-old girls.
No, I'm not, actually.
Okay. That was...
Did my fake seriousness really work?
Like, I feel like the problem is that there are people who do complain about that kind of thing.
I know there are.
Like there are... They're probably like male rights activists who are listening to that, salivating at the jaws. Just like, yes, they know what's going on. No, we don't. Please stop listening to the rights activists.
Yeah, it's a comic for seven-year-old girls. Yeah, I'm assuming the seven-year-old girls. But it's a comic for young girls, and it works as a comic for young girls. Whether it's got guys in or not, who cares? Bombshells is a different matter.
Exactly. I think... The important thing is that we all agree that Space Prince Leo is the worst.
Yes. Anyway, over to you.
Yep. So, I've been reading another one that you gave me / I stole from you. The Tick.
Yes, you stole from me.
So, this has got two stories in it. The first one is Happy Birthday, Tick. Basically, it begins just Tick and Arthur fighting a bunch of giant ants and just bursting through the wall of a child's birthday party. And basically, you know, they stay for cake. Because like, Arthur saying like, no, Tick, we probably couldn't. Like he says, yeah, we're not butting in on a little kid's party, Tick. And then the mum just says, please don't make us eat the rest of our cake ourselves, because we will. And then Tick yells out, it's our civic duty, Arthur. Think of the children. So that then, it's like the thing is, the Tick doesn't understand what a birthday is. So like, he basically just asks the child like, what's the occasion? And like when she says, you know, it's my birthday, he's like, oh yes, a yearly reminder that on our cosmic calendar we have transitory specks hurtling inevitably toward oblivion and nothingness and entropy. Freaky! And then the child just like bursts into tears. And Arthur just says, we'll take our cake to go. So basically then the Tick doesn't realise that adults still have birthdays because they don't have birthday parties.
Okay.
So he decides that maybe it's his birthday and he should have a birthday party. And like, but he doesn't know who to invite except for Arthur. So he basically said, Arthur basically tells him, well, how about you invite the people you have the most fun with? And then like kind of we get, it's the Tick's birthday party. Kind of all the other heroes are there. It's a bit weird. Only for then, like the Tick's archenemy, the Terror, to arrive. Because that's who he invited. What's more fun on your birthday than getting to fight with your archenemy?
Well, yeah. Why not?
Exactly. So then we have the second story, which is Civic Duty, and it's the Tick. He's at a presidential debate, and basically the Red Scare, who's like this like spike-covered anti-communist supervillain, is running for president, but he's got some stiff competition.
Is the Tick running as well?
No, he is not. He is running against Mr. Kurt Bombast, who just introduces himself by saying, this is a huge night for me, Sally. But really, it's even bigger for everyone else out there. You're all very excited that I'm here tonight.
Why does that sound familiar?
Why does it sound familiar indeed? And his running opponent, Miss Capricious Blue, who just walks out saying, let me start out by saying that I agree with everyone here tonight.
Yep.
Yes. It's Trump and Hillary. Like, I love that Kurt Bombast has like this gigantic sort of wave of hair that he uses to pick the microphone up with.
He's got prehensile hair.
He disappears on air.
Is it bombastic like him?
It is indeed.
So he has bombastic prehensile hair.
Like, well, I think my favourite quote for him is like, one of the questions from the audience is, what's your favourite colour? And he's just, I've got a very good answer to that. I wrote a book on it. Here's what's important. The other colours have all chosen me as their favourite. It's true.
And what was Hillary's answer?
It starts by saying blue, obviously, but no, yellow. Because she's a coward. But no, I think like the best one that Hillary gets is she ignores one of the questions and just says, like, well, sorry, I was just writing an email. This says, Sally, I'll be honest with you. I didn't hear the question. So why don't you tell me what people want me to say and I'll just say it.
Excellent.
Because that's the joke. Compared to Trump and Hillary, an actual supervillain looks like the best choice for president.
Those are actually some very true words.
Yes. Yes, they are. Anyway, that's the tick. As always, a joy to read.
Yes, as always. Okay, so my turn then, Andrew.
Yes.
Yeah?
I didn't realise you were waiting for me to, like, confirm.
Yes, I was. I picked up an interesting one. And it's, you know that they do loads of comics on the continent, right?
Indeed they do.
And the comics industry is actually huge on the continent. And we don't really see it because it's continental Europe. What we see is mainly American comic books because we are, after all, the 51st state. But I found an interesting one, a free comic book day interesting one, called The Incal. And it is by Alejandro Jodorowsky and Jean Mebius Giraud. And Mebius comic book fans were probably heard of before. But Jodorowsky is a film director, generally. That's what most people know him as. And this is basically an introduction to this thing called The Incal. This is a sci-fi story. The artwork is very, very European when you look at it. It's very detailed, but also very European. Think of stuff like Valerian, you know, the new movie that's coming out. Think of the original graphic novel of Valerian, or some of the other stuff that used to be in the old heavy metal magazine when that was kicking around. I think it's still running around. Or some of the European stuff that's been featured in 2000 AD, which I think you're going to be doing as well, the Free Comic Book Day.
Well, you've spoiled the surprise, Rob.
I'm sorry. Was it supposed to be a surprise?
Nah, not really.
But anyway, this starts off with a Class R licensed private investigator called John DeFool. And he's being attacked by these men in green masks and green costumes who want him to talk, but what they want him to talk about isn't explained. And then they pick him up and throw him off the edge of the bridge that they're on, and he falls, and oh, how he falls. And he keeps falling because everyone thinks that he's a suicide attempt, and at the bottom of this is an acid lake because they have so many suicide attempts. And if you just leave the bodies there rotting, then it'll attract all sorts of stuff. So they put an acid lake at the bottom. And it's a very long drop because these are very, very large vertical cities. You remember in The Fifth Element when you first see Bruce Willis's character and you first see Earth or the city, and it's very tall and goes down very deep. This is one of those type futuristic sci-fi cities. And so John DeFool, he tells them he'll talk, but then they get attacked by the police. And he ends up injured. He's having to explain to the police, look, I went to play the role of bodyguard to this noble person who wanted me to basically protect her as she went down into the depraved depths, which it did. She got jiggy with a guy with a jackal's head, and so she told me that I need to get her back by midnight, and so I tried sorting that out, but she didn't want to listen. And then I pointed out that she'd turned into an old hag from a young beauty to the jackal. They both wanted to kill me, so I ran into the sewers and I ran into a giant orangutan who apparently died at my feet because he'd been stabbed by other people. And then I hit my head and was unconscious and woke up when I was being beaten by these guys in green. I don't know what's going on.
Neither do I.
Well, yeah. That's the story he's given to the police. Thing is, he does actually know what's going on because John DeFool, the orangutan was true, part was true, But the orangutan was looking for him, and the orangutan creature type thing was looking for him, and gives him this thing that glows. That is the Inkal. And now John is in a lot of trouble because everybody wants the Inkal, and he doesn't know what the Inkal is. All he knows is that people are chasing him for it and trying to kill him for it. So, yeah. This basically is a good portion of the story, and it ends with John escaping from the futuristic city and ending up down planet side in a rural area, and he's got to figure out what to do next. And I'm actually looking forward to reading the rest of this because it's sci-fi, and it's good sci-fi, and I like good sci-fi.
Yep, good sci-fi. It's best sci-fi.
Yes, and it's got robots, it's got aliens, it's got futuristic cities, it's got a mysterious artifact that everybody wants to kill the protagonist for, but nobody knows what it does. Everybody seems to know more about it than him, and he only got hold of it by a fluke. So, you know, that's the kind of story that I like. I like stories where they keep you guessing. They don't over-explain things right at the beginning, and they keep you guessing.
Yep, sounds good.
Yes. So, moving on to you.
Yep, because, like you said, I have been reading 2000 AD.
Yes.
So, because we're coming to the end of the show, I'll be fairly brief about this one.
Yeah.
So, because it's, as always, it's like a nice collection of a couple of short stories and also kind of preview-esque things for new 2000 AD series.
Yes.
So, you've got a Judge Dredd story of him trying to track down someone who has been killing other judges, but then kind of dressing them up like Judge Dredd. Then you have probably my favourite story, this Black Blood.
Yes.
Who is from ABC Warriors, who are like the futuristic war robots.
I love ABC Warriors.
Yeah. And Black Blood is kind of the like robot dictator of Mars, but he's demanding like a duel with his arch nemesis. Someone who has been, like, basically talking smack about him for years and years now.
And what's his arch-nemesis called?
It's the mysterious General Public.
Yep.
So basically, the government have to make a robot. It's like, yes, I'm General Public. And then once Blackbird's killed him, they basically, like, psychologically implant someone, make them incapable of saying the words General Public.
Yeah.
Which, that's just... That tickled my funny bone.
But that's just one part of it, because at the end, Rojas...
Yes, that's right, Rojas walks past and just mentions the General Public.
But the thing is, he's not mentioning...
You've got Blackbird just doing a spit take.
Yeah, because he's not mentioning General Public as in the General Public. Because I love what they and, you know, in order to replace the word General Public to describe the common people, they give you that list of words.
Oh, yeah, like, ordinary people, loyal citizens of Makana, populace, fragwits.
Yeah, and fragwits.
But then Rojas just says, in general, public lavatories need to be available for Martians as well as humans.
Exactly. But all thingamabob, what's his name? Blood thingy.
Oh, yeah, Black Blood.
That's it. All Black Blood can hear is General Public.
Yeah. So then you've got, actually, basically what's the only preview for a series... Hope.
Yes.
Which actually seems pretty interesting.
It's kind of like...
set in an alternative version of 1950s Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Where black magic was used to win World War II, and now private investigator Mallory Hope has to use his own black magic to, like, solve mysteries, even though it costs him a bit of his own soul.
Yeah. See, what I like about it is that it's very kind of 2000 AD's take on John Constantine.
Yeah, it is. It's like, it's got that same, every time you use this, you lose a bit of yourself.
Yeah.
Like, I think one of my favourite lines they mention is that basically President Truman killed himself after using black magic to win the war.
Wow.
Then you've got just a little Judge Anderson story of her fighting the alien bounty hunter Trapper Hag. It makes her hallucinate that Judge Death is coming after her, but she gets over it.
Yes.
But speaking of Judge Death, we then get Death World, which is like a prequel to Judge Death's first appearance. Just him, you know, enacting brutal justice on his home world.
Yep.
Which is good. I love a bit of Judge Death.
Who doesn't?
Also, no one. Also, what I really love is just the back cover of this, because they've actually got a really nice tribute on the back, which is just a judge badge with Dylan written on it as kind of a tribute to Steve Dylan.
Excellent.
Which, yeah, thought that was nice.
I like that.
You have one last quick one.
Yes, this is my last one, and it'll be very quick. This is Steam Wars, Strike Leader, and it starts off. I'm just going to read the premise a little bit. It's very quick. It is a period of civil war. The Free Realms have gathered to face the overwhelming forces of the rising Crimson Empire. No nation, kingdom, or colony can hope to face the Empire alone. Now, Flight Lieutenant Westbrook, operating from the airship RSS Beaufort, leads her squadron of attack bombers home from the vast battlefields of Aiden. Now, Aiden isn't Aiden from Cinema Eclectica. He has no vast battlefields. But this surprised me, because you start off with people flying what are effectively Y-wing bombers from Star Wars.
Always a good start.
Right? And they're being chased by what look like TIE fighters, right? They do look like TIE fighters, only to be saved by what is literally an X-Wing fighter.
Oh, I know. This was the one I didn't pick up, because its logo looked a lot like Star Wars, and I thought it was a Star Wars comic, and then it wasn't, and I got angry at it, so I threw it away.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's not a Star Wars comic, and but it's very kind of British, in a way, but it's also very Last Exile, the anime series Last Exile, that is. It's kind of steampunk in a way. You have somebody turning up called Foxtail, who's flying this futuristic ship, and everybody's here for a meeting, and then at the end of it, you have the enemy going, "We're going fox hunting," because obviously they're after Foxtail. And it got me interested, basically, because you have the little droids and everything like that, who are the navigators and engineers. You have the references to Star Wars. You have so many references to Star Wars in this, it's actually quite scary. But they've blended that with kind of Last Exile, and they've created Steam Wars. So I'm curious how much they've taken from these two properties and put together. I'm curious how far the rabbit hole goes with this one.
Okay, well, I'm sure we'll find out, unless they get shut down for copyright infringement.
I don't think they will. They've made enough changes to have it as their own. If they put a literal X-Wing in to the story, then yeah, copyright infringement. But they've redesigned it and reworked it, and it's an open cockpit as well, because it's not meant to fly in space.
Okay, good stuff. And, well, I think we're pretty much at the end of the show.
Pretty much, yeah.
But just before we end, just kind of wanted to briefly mention that another one I read that we didn't really get time to do is Buffy the High School Years, which also featured Plants vs. Zombies, which it was surprisingly good. Like, the Buffy one, it's got some nice nostalgia. It's still got that very snappy, quite witty Joss Whedon-esque dialogue. And also I appreciate it because there's a scene, it's basically Buffy and Xander in a comic shop, and like he says, "Oh, why don't you try X-Men? I'm sure you'll like it." Get it, Rob, because Joss Whedon wrote X-Men.
Oh.
That was I found that fun. And also Plants vs. Zombies is like weirdly good for something that's just a tie into a mobile game.
True.
Like, it's genuinely quite funny. It's basically got a bunch of them going back in time to Old West and arriving at Shivertown, biggest city in the Squeamish Valley, population 201, 167 scaredy cats, 54 lily livers, 45 chicken-hearted curs, 34 gutless wanders, and one mean old sheriff. And that's just like the sign outside the town.
Cool.
And then like the sheriff appears, and like obviously starts looking at the zombies going, "They look a bit strange." But it's okay, because they just explain they're big city folk. And he just immediately goes, "Yeah, that makes sense. I read about them in this here novel, which is titled More or Less Believable Tales, A Big City Fellow versus the London Duck Alliance."
What can I say?
So yeah, Plants vs. Zombies. Weirdly a lot of fun.
Well, it is. I mean, it shouldn't work as a game, but it does. It shouldn't work as a comic, but it seems to.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where whoever's writing it has kind of realised what an inherently silly concept it is.
Yep.
And has just decided to push that as far as it'll go.
Awesome. So, was that the last one for today?
Yeah, that's the last one for today.
We still have loads more, but we'll space them out over the next few shows rather than doing all of them in one show like we've done today, because, frankly, I'm exhausted.
Yeah. Alternatively, we'll never mention them again. Who knows?
We don't know. We haven't decided yet. But, yeah, all of our previous shows are available on iTunes, Audioboom, and various other places on the internet. If you're listening on iTunes, then leave us a review, leave us a rating, or subscribe to us. You know, if you leave us a review or a rating, it does help us improve. It does let us know what things that we can do, what things we need to do to improve.
Like being able to properly pronounce a blurb.
Yes, that would help. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, and various other places on the internet, or just email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. And that's everything for today. We'll see you on the next exciting episode of Four Panel. Until then, I have been Rob.
And I've been Andrew.
And we'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.